from the heart of our nation's capital, here's Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Washington Watch. Coming up on this Monday edition,
our nation is witnessing a merciless campaign to wipe out our history, defame our heroes, erase our values, and indoctrinate our children.
That was President Donald Trump speaking Friday evening at Mount Rushmore in South Dakota. President Trump pulled no punches in his speech as he called out the left for their cancel culture. Now, President Trump is not alone. On Thursday of last week, Utah Senator Mike Lee also spoke out on the lawlessness sweeping major cities across America and attempted to pass a simple resolution so that the Senate would be on record condemning mob violence. What happened? Senator Lee joins us later with the answer here on Washington Watch. And the U.S. Department of State is stepping up its pressure on communist China as more reports surface about human rights abuses among Uyghurs and others in Xinjiang, China. We will explore what additional actions the U.S. might also take against China as they crack down on advocates for democracy in Hong Kong under the new national security law. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo joins us in just a moment. And I missed a day of radio last week to speak at an event in Colorado for Andrew Womack at Karis Bible College. In fact, General Boyk and I both spoke. Well, the next morning, Karis Bible College received a cease and desist order from the governor, Jared Polis. Why? Attorney Richard Mast with Legal Liberty Counsel, who is representing Karis Bible College, joins us later with the answer. And Colorado's governor is not the only Democratic governor using a double standard when it comes to churches. California Governor Gavin Newsom has ordered churches to stop singing. Well, is it time for the rocks to cry out or the church to take a stand? Travis Weber, FRC's Vice President of Policy, joins me to discuss how the selective targeting of churches could have a political motive. The website, TonyPerkins.com, if you're on Twitter, it is at T Perkins. Each day, the world becomes more familiar with the human rights violations pouring out of communist China. The communist regime is now imposing forced sterilization and abortions on Uyghur Muslims and other minorities in Xinjiang province. Last week, the State Department issued a warning to companies with supply chain links to those who may be complicit in forced labor and other human rights violations in China, basically saying ignorance is no excuse. Joining me now to talk about this and more is the 70th Secretary of State, former member of Congress from the state of Kansas, Secretary Mike Pompeo. Secretary, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Tony, it's great to be with you again. Hope you're doing well. Hope you had a great 4th, too.
I did, sir, and I hope you did as well. It was nice to have a long weekend with the family, barbecuing, and just enjoying the freedoms that so many have given all to secure for us.
Amen.
Well, let me just start with a very pointed question. Is there anything that you could hear about China that would shock you at this point?
When you stare at General Secretary Xi's actions and just lay them down against the most fundamental human rights, the most unalienable rights that we know each of us has because we're made in the image of God, there is an enormous mismatch. And whether you reference what's taking place in Xinjiang, we'll certainly talk about that. But we know the history in Tibet. We've now watched this national security law in Hong Kong just take freedom away, freedom that the Chinese Communist Party had promised to deliver to those people. And you want the Chinese people to be successful, and you want them to live good lives, and you want the United States to have a relationship. But we know what communist regimes do. We know the way authoritarian regimes treat their people all too often, and that's what we're seeing in China today.
Well, Mr. Secretary, you've made no secret about it. One of the top priorities for this, for the Department of State under your leadership, under the leadership of President Trump, is religious freedom. And what we see coming out of China, in particular as it applies to Uyghurs, both an ethnic group but a religious orientation, they are being targeted. And the reports coming out, this latest report about forced sterilization, forced birth control, including forced abortions. This is, I would say, shocking, but not shocking, but certainly troubling to see the length to which they are going to basically create cultural genocide for the Uyghurs.
Tony, we've seen this action now for years. It has only escalated, and we do all that we can diplomatically to call out this misbehavior. You mentioned the action that we took last week. It wasn't just the State Department. It was other government agencies as well, making it clear that businesses that are connected to this activity, whether that is the forced sterilization or the forced abortions, these are the kind of things that you remember reading about from the worst times of the last century. Businesses that are connected to that will be held to account. They will be held responsible for their actions. Precisely how we'll do that, we've left open-ended because we want to put them on notice first. We want each company to make its own decision. We watch American businesses claim that they are good stewards, working not only for profit but for good outcomes and for the protection of human rights and decency. Any business leader who says that they stand for those things that we all care about and who is engaged in activities that are connected to this Chinese Communist Party activity in Xinjiang can't hold those two thoughts in their head at the same time, and the United States isn't going to permit it to continue.
You know, Mr. Secretary, the irony is, you know, 20 years ago when the argument was being made that China should have a permanent most favored nation status because economic engagement activity between the two countries would bring about a greater appreciation for human rights. But it appears that as we see some of those businesses that are benefiting from the human rights abuses, the forced labor in China, that it may have been the reverse, where many of these Fortune 500 international companies have been more influenced by China than China influenced by them.
Yeah, Tony, the theory of the case that was a more economic opening will lead to more political freedoms, more fundamental rights being provided to the Chinese people, just turned out not to have been true. It just didn't work, and I'm not criticizing those who came before. We can now plainly see that it didn't work, and that means the United States has to take a different path. President Trump's laid that path out pretty clearly. He is the first president. This is not partisan. This is Republican and Democrat presidents before him allowed China to engage in trade relationship with the United States that caused middle America, working people all across the United States to lose their jobs. And we can now see not only was there that economic damage done to the United States, but the people inside of China weren't treated properly as well. Twin evils.
So, Secretary Pompeo, you said there are other federal entities involved in the announcement last week. That includes the Department of Treasury, Commerce, and Department of Homeland Security. Essentially, as you said, you're putting these businesses on notice. I'm assuming that, as I said earlier, ignorance is no excuse. They will be held accountable if they're benefiting from the human rights abuses that China is engaging in.
That's right. Look, we are engaged in conversations. A number of companies already have reached out to us and said, hey, we're not sure exactly where in our supply chain. Sometimes it's more complicated than one might think. So we try to help them figure their way through it. We try to make sure. But many companies have come in and said, hey, we want to comply. We want to get this right. We don't want to have anything to do with this. We don't believe that we do. Can you help us make sure? We'll do everything we can. Others have come in saying, hey, we know we may well have a problem. Please help us try and figure our way to fix it. Those are the ways that we want to address this. Those are those voluntary compliance companies stepping forward and saying, hey, I don't want to touch this. My customers aren't going to want me to do this. It's not the right thing to do. That's what we're hoping businesses will come to us and share with us their concerns, and we'll work through it. For those who choose not to, who chose to think, no, goodness gracious, I'm just going to continue to go turn a profit on the backs of human trafficking or forced labor, those are the kind of things that when the time is right, we will ensure don't continue to happen. It gives them an unfair advantage against those companies who have refused to do it, and it's just plain old wrong.
That makes a lot of sense. And so, Secretary Pompeo, I would ask you a question. With that being the goal of actually voluntary compliance, what can our listeners do? What can the American consumer do to aid in this process?
Well, we've watched consumers who all have to make decisions. We've seen consumers make decisions about the companies they purchase products from. They should all be aware that this kind of activity is taking place. There's no master list, to the best of my knowledge, of those companies that are there at this point, but I'm sure at an appropriate time there will be. But more important than that is we we know that people who work for those companies don't want to be part of this. We hope they'll all make plain to their supervisors, to their company, that this is that our company can be successful without engaging in this kind of activity. That's the kind of thing we hope to raise awareness on all across the world, not just in the United States, but everywhere, that freedom-loving people simply want every human being to have the basic unalienable rights to which the Lord has entitled them.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. My guest, Secretary of State Mike Pompeo. Secretary Pompeo, last week, the national security law pushed through by China governing Hong Kong went into place. We saw immediately a crackdown. Your concern about Hong Kong and where it's headed?
So now, several weeks back, it became clear that Hong Kong was no longer autonomous. That the promise of one country, two systems, a 50-year commitment, now some 23 years in, the Chinese Communist Party has chosen to break that commitment to those people. There have been brave leaders demanding that they continue to have their freedoms. Those people are at real risk of now having the national security law, which has no due process guarantees, could apply extraterritorially, and certainly could apply to those who aren't of Hong Kong to origin or residence. This is a broad law. I could put people in jail for life. And these are the kinds of things that we have worried about. It now makes Hong Kong no longer that special place. And that's just another communist-run city, unfortunately.
This is a this concern, I should say, is a bipartisan issue. You have Democrats, Republicans both speaking out. We have congressional action taking place here. There are economic tools that are being employed. Is there any additional action going to be taken to aid or help those that may be targeted by the communist regime who have been the leaders of the democracy movement?
So collectively, we're going to do that. You've seen that the United Kingdom has made an announcement they're going to accept up to, I think it's 3 million people who might want to leave Hong Kong. I know other countries have made that commitment as well. The United States will do its part to be sure to protect those people as best we can who are engaged in activities trying to just demand simple, basic freedoms. Unfortunately, the Chinese Communist Party has made this decision. It's made a decision to turn on the people of Hong Kong in ways that are inconsistent with the promises they made to them. And we're going to do all that we can to shine a spotlight on that and make sure, too, as the president said in his remarks, those who are responsible for the decisions with respect to Hong Kong will be held accountable by the United States.
Secretary Mike Pompeo, I want to thank you for joining us. And I want to thank you for continuing to keep a spotlight on the issue of religious freedom around the world. It's moving the needle, and many, many men, women, and children are experiencing and will experience freedom as a result. So thank you so much.
Thank you, Tony. Bless you. Have a good day.
All right. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo. All right. When we come back, the president on Friday at Mount Rushmore in South Dakota, talking about the cancel culture, challenging the left for their run on history to try to eradicate history. Well, he's not the only one. Utah Senator Mike Lee was on the floor of the Senate last week trying to pass just a simple resolution, getting the Senate on record. What happened? He joins us next to talk about it. Masculinity in America has never been under attack the way it is today. We've reached the point where the term itself is considered toxic or offensive to many. The consistent message in our nation is that masculinity by nature is bad and is the root cause of many of the problems plaguing our society. From his experience as a military combat officer and ordained minister of the gospel, Lieutenant General William Boykin has seen and dealt with firsthand the breakdown of leadership in our nation by the lack of godly men living lives of biblical purpose. In his latest book, Man to Man, Rediscovering Masculinity in a Challenging World, he addresses the essential elements of manhood as a provider, an instructor, a defender, a battle buddy, and a chaplain. And explains how to personally develop these traits and pass them to the next generation. Get your copy today of Man to Man, wherever books are sold.
Absent fathers, distracted fathers, and angry fathers have created a vacuum of the soul in the lives of many children. Pornography is epidemic, affecting the male brain, isolating his heart, and degrading women who long to be cherished. Confusion and even skepticism about marriage run rampant, especially in our younger generations. Selfishness among men has led to broken homes and a trail littered with broken hearts, including their own. Where can you turn to find the solutions to these problems? Leadership and Love, A Tale of Two Fathers, is a new publication from Family Research Council that takes a look at two men, Joshua and the father of the prodigal son, as strong examples of leadership and love. It also weaves in an understanding of attachment science to underscore the needs of children, which need to be met to become emotionally healthy and spiritually strong. Visit frc.org/fathers to learn more.
In today's culture, it can be difficult for men to navigate what it means to be a man and to find clear models of masculinity and manhood. There are many competing ideas out there and even confusion around the basic concepts of gender and sex. Where can boys, young men, husbands, and fathers find a model of manhood, leadership, and strength in today's culture of confusion? This is Tony Perkins inviting you to join me at a Stand Courageous Men's Conference led by men who are seasoned, compassionate leaders who understand the issues of the day. These issues will invest in unpacking our role as defenders, providers, instructors, and battle buddies so that men can have generational influence as a chaplain inside and outside the home. Join us at one of our upcoming events in Texas, Louisiana, Florida, or Virginia. Learn more about Stand Courageous and find an event near you at StandCourageous.com. That's StandCourageous.com. StandCourageous.com. You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. Glad to have you with us on this Monday afternoon. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on social media, on Twitter or Parler, it's at T Perkins. All right, here's another clip I want to play of President Trump Friday night at Mount Rushmore.
Angry mobs are trying to tear down statues of our founders, deface our most sacred memorials, and unleash a wave of violent crime in our cities. Many of these people have no idea why they are doing this, but some know exactly what they are doing. They think the American people are weak and soft and submissive. But no, the American people are strong and proud, and they will not allow our country and all of its values, history, and culture to be taken from them.
Well, this violence, mob violence that is enveloping cities across the nation. Last week, Utah Senator Mike Lee went to the Senate floor to speak about this and put forth a simple resolution. Not, was it going to solve the problems? They're still trying to work on that. It was just going to put the Senate on record saying, we condemn this lawlessness. But it didn't happen. Why? Joining us now to talk more about this is Senator Mike Lee of Utah, who authored last week's resolution. Senator, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thank you very much, Tony. It's good to be with you.
Well, Senator, it looked pretty straightforward to me, just a simple resolution calling on the Senate to renounce, to condemn the violence that was taking place across the nation. It just said it started this way. The United States of America was founded in 1776 on universal principles of freedom, justice, and human equality. Throughout our nation's history, Americans have struggled to realize those ideas, but nonetheless made greater progress toward them than any nation on earth. And it's being put at risk with the violence. And you called on your colleagues to pass it, but they would not. Why?
Yeah, they would not because they decided that they couldn't agree with that. And it really is stunning. It was surprising to me at the time. An innocent African, an innocent man was shot by Black Lives Matter supporters in Provo, Utah, just last Monday. This poor man was not trying to make a statement. He was just trying to get home. And Black Lives Matter supporters surrounded his car in downtown Provo, and one of them shot him. That's completely unacceptable. And so my resolution, all it did was call on the Senate to condemn violence and physical assault and destruction of property. The resolution was designed to be unifying. It avoided controversial subjects. All it asked of us was basic dignity and civil respect. And apparently that's to ask for today's Democratic Party. We've got to start defunding those that hate America and do it on America's dime.
I mean, it's becoming quite evident, Senator, that this partisan divide in the Senate, that there are those that see this as political opportunity and political theater. For instance, just the week before last, your colleague, South Carolina Senator Tim Scott, had a measure put forward to address the issue of police brutality and just to begin to address the issue. The same thing happened. Democratic members of the Senate, with the exception of two, blocked it and kept it from even having debate on the measure.
Yeah, that's right. That is indicative of how far we've descended in office. It really is kind of crazy. And in fact, to put a point on this, to demonstrate the fact that they didn't really find the language itself objectionable, but wanted to use it to score political points, they offered to let it pass as long as we would insert language saying all elected officials, especially the president of the United States, need to understand that, you know, it's important not to inflame other people. And I said, look, I'll take the rest of the language, but I'm not going to let you keep in the part about the president of the United States. I'm not going to let you turn this into an anti-Trump rant, because the whole point of it was to be unifying rather than to be partisan. They wanted to make it partisan. I wouldn't let them do it. But as I pointed out to them, you know, this really is going to bring up a lot of additional topics. We've got federal funds going to colleges and universities that punish free speech and discriminate against religious students and conservatives. We've got city councils who defund their police departments and refuse to protect public safety. We've got school districts who embrace the ahistorical nonsense of the 1619 Project. These people are hating America on America's dime, and it's time for us to cut off their allowance.
That makes perfect sense, I think, to most Americans. I want to go back to your resolution for just a moment, because basically it concludes with, therefore, be it resolved that it is the sense of the Senate that the rising tide of vandalism, mob violence, and the mob mentality that feeds it, including its cruel and intolerant cancel culture, should be condemned by all Americans. I mean, that's pretty straightforward. It is anti-American. It undermines the very republic, which extends to them the freedoms that they are taking advantage of, and quite frankly, the lawlessness that is raging throughout cities. My conclusion is, Senator, that what we see happening on the streets in many ways is a product of America's anti-American education system.
Yeah, I think that's right. They have co-opted the entire system so as to get people to hate America. You no longer see civics and principles like federalism and separation of powers being taught in schools the way they used to. And instead, what you see is a lot of sort of self-loathing anti-American propaganda, which is really disturbing. And this is why it's so important for us as families to talk about these things around the dinner table, to tell the stories of America's founding, about the Constitution and the Declaration of Independence.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. This is a time where parents, grandparents need to step forward and fill the vacuum that has been created by an educational system that is hostile to these founding principles, but in doing so undermines their own authority and their longevity. We got to take a break, Senator. Will you stick around? I want to ask you a couple more questions about what do we do? You know, this cancel culture. How should Americans respond to this? Can you stick around?
Sure.
All right, folks. Senator Mike Lee is going to stay around for our next segment. We're going to be talking about what you can do, what we need to do in this hour when the cancel culture is raging across America. Don't go away. We're coming back with more Washington Watch. Check out the website, TonyPerkins.com. And still to come, we've got a poll question for you today. So don't go away. We're back after this.
Do Christians have a biblical obligation to participate in government? Do Christians have a duty to vote? And if so, what principles should inform them while casting their ballots? How should pastors think about politics, and how can they shepherd their congregations well during an election season? The gospel of Jesus Christ has implications for all areas of our life, including politics. Christians must be prepared to grapple with the moral issues of our day, the reality of our two-party system, and follow our Christian convictions to their logical end by voting for candidates that support clear biblical values. Family Research Council has partnered with 21 state family policy councils for a new edition of Biblical Principles for Political Engagement. This booklet provides biblical wisdom and clear answers to pivotal questions to help you navigate the political landscape. This publication exists to facilitate careful thinking about issues and encourage God-honoring political engagement that filters all issues and candidates through a biblical worldview. To read the full publication, visit frc.org/engage.
Not so long ago, sex education in public schools involved learning about human growth and development and listening to advice on how to be careful, respect others, and save sex for marriage. Things are very different today. Parents have two main concerns about sex ed: that it sexualizes children and that it's loaded with LGBTQ indoctrination. Family Research Council has released a new resource to address this issue titled Sex Education in Public Schools: Sexualization of Children and LGBT Indoctrination. This resource reveals troubling examples of the agenda-driven content being pushed in modern sex ed and exposes the powerful organizations behind it all. Finally, it offers some action steps for parents to consider in their fight to protect the health and innocence of their children. For more information about sex education in public schools and to view this resource, visit frc.org/sexeducation. That's frc.org/sexeducation.
I'm Tony Perkins, and this is Washington Watch, the website TonyPerkins.com. All right, I've got another clip I want to play from President Trump speaking at Mount Rushmore on Friday evening. Play clip number three, please.
One of their political weapons is cancel culture, driving people from their jobs, shaming dissenters, and demanding total submission from anyone who disagrees. This is the very definition of totalitarianism. And it is completely alien to our culture and to our values. And it has absolutely no place in the United States of America.
Senator Lee, are you concerned? Do you share the president's concern about this cancel culture?
Absolutely, I do. Look, President Trump's speech the other day in front of Mount Rushmore was probably the best of his presidency. The very founding of our nation is under attack from a wealthy coastal elite. And the New York Times has now abandoned any pretense of objectivity that it once had and is now actively trying to teach society and our children that we live in a racist country that's unworthy of defense. So we've got these angry mobs tearing down statues of Washington and Jefferson and Columbus. We can't let them do this. The very best thing we can all do, that all of us, all of your listeners can do, is to talk about American history, real American history at the dinner table. Talk to your kids about the founding documents and the ideas in them and why they were so revolutionary and so good. America is great. And these things are no longer being taught in popular culture. And so we as families have to do it ourselves. We can do it, but we do have to work at it.
Well, and there's a sense of urgency because there is, as you said, there's no pretense that there's somehow objectivity in our media anymore. They've become the opposition party to everything conservative, to not just this president, but to the conservative principles and ideals upon which this nation has been built upon. And many Americans are fearful from this cancel culture. People being driven from their jobs. Of course, they're being attacked on social media. This is a form of intimidation seeking to marginalize and silence the vast majority of Americans so a small percentage can come in and take over.
No, that's exactly right. And that is the definition of propaganda, or it's one of the best definitions that there is. It's a type of pervasive messaging that seeks to completely marginalize any opposing viewpoints. If you can marginalize an opposing viewpoint as not worthy of expression, and as if it came from something, from someone who is utterly undeserving of even being heard, you have successfully implemented a propaganda machine in a way that would have made, you know, a lot of the early propagandists in the early part of the 20th century really envious. And I hate to see that happening here in the United States.
Well, and Senator Lee, you're a student of history, a student of the Constitution, a brilliant constitutionalist in our United States Senate. But when you see what is happening here, where there is a silencing of really the majority of Americans, they're fearful, they're intimidated by this. But what has made our republic work for 244 years is the ability to have differing opinions, but to be able to verbalize those opinions, walk into the public square, have a vigorous debate, and then arrive at consensus, having put out your concerns, having the other party put out their concerns. We arrive at a workable agreement, a way forward. That's not happening now because of the silencing, and that is dangerous to the future of this country.
It is. It's dangerous, and it's not good for us as humans. It's not good for our souls. That's why this thing that people talk about, civility, ultimately centers on Jesus Christ's teachings of love and respect. We can disagree with someone without being disagreeable. We can disagree with them even passionately while still loving them and treating them with decency and respect. That's why love is the ultimate antidote to incivility.
And that, quite frankly, is why this experiment has worked for 244 years. And if we lose this foundation that you just made reference to, which actually the president made reference to at Mount Rushmore, our Judeo-Christian heritage, which has again been systematically attacked by the prevailing elitist culture, we lose the very foundation upon which we stand, which we can work out our differences and preserve the future.
Yeah, that's right. This is the greatest civilization the world has ever known. And we're great not because of who we are, but because of what we do, because we've chosen to be good and kind to each other.
Well said. Senator Mike Lee, I want to thank you for joining us today, but also want to thank you for stepping forward in the face of this cancel culture and saying what needs to be said. There are still a handful of you on Capitol Hill that are willing to do that, and you need to know that there are many, many, many people across America grateful for your courage and your leadership.
Thanks so much, Tony.
All right, Senator Mike Lee of Utah. And by the way, folks, we need to speak out. We need to have courage, to take courage in the face of this cancel culture. We're going to talk about this next. Last week, I mentioned I was out in Colorado. I'm going to tell you about it next when we return. Don't go away. We're back with more Washington Watch after this.
Could you use some timely and original commentary to read this summer, specifically on the issues facing our culture today? FRCblog.com has just what you're looking for. The content on our blog is written by our policy experts, members of the Family Research Council team, as well as outside contributors. You can learn about religious liberty, life, marriage, family, sexuality, public policy, and the culture. Check out this list of a few of our most recent titles. What Does It Mean to Be a Woman? DC Christians Take to the Streets to Sing, Lament, and Pray, and Prayerfully Responding to Civil Unrest. At Family Research Council, our mission is to advance faith, family, and freedom in the culture by helping you to live out your faith and stand for truth. Our blog helps you do just that. Stay informed and get the resources you need at frcblog.com. On April 16th, President Trump and the White House Coronavirus Task Force announced a three-phase plan with guidelines for how states can begin scaling back restrictions. Churches should begin putting in place plans to reopen and operate their ministries according to the guidance of the Centers for Disease Control as state officials begin lifting orders. Here at Family Research Council, we have summarized the White House three-phase plan and how it relates to in-person church meetings and gatherings. Check out our resource, What Pastors Should Know About the White House Plan to Open Up America Again. Our resource offers practical guidelines for how churches and houses of worship can begin to operate safely as our country reopens. Visit frc.org/church guidelines to view this resource and learn more. There, you'll also find our full list of resources for churches in the time of coronavirus. Again, that's frc.org/church guidelines.
Hey, Matt.
Hey, Hannah.
What's going on? Why so gloomy?
Well, I'm a little disappointed. I had a lot planned to do during the stay-at-home time, and I just didn't do it.
Oh, yeah? What did you have planned that you didn't get to do?
Well, I was actually hoping I would finally be able to get time to do a regular Bible reading routine, and I started a couple of times. I just didn't stick with it.
Don't be too down on yourself. Starting a new routine can be hard, but one way to help is to join in with others and to have a good game plan. I think I have a good solution for you.
Oh, yeah?
Tony Perkins and FRC are doing a 2-year study in the Word. They have it all mapped out.
When did they start? I would be so far behind.
Oh, that's not a problem. You can literally jump in anytime. There's a daily reading, just a couple of chapters a day, with questions to help you think about what you're reading.
Nice. Where can I find this?
Go to frc.org/Bible, and you can get started.
Where's that again?
frc.org/Bible.
Got it. Checking it out now.
The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Parler, it's at T Perkins. All right, last week, I missed a day of radio last week to go out to Colorado, outside of Colorado Springs, to Karis Bible College. Andrew Womack, a friend of mine, Andrew Womack Ministries, had a 3-day conference. I think it was a 3-day conference. I was one of the speakers along with General Boykin, actually, on Wednesday night. Myself, E.W. Jackson, a couple others were there with us, and it was a clearly, overtly political event. We were talking about elections. We were talking about policies. We were talking about what Christians need to do to be registered and be voting. Well, and I'm on my way back on Thursday, and I get a call that the governor of Colorado, Governor Polis, a Democrat, sent a cease and desist order to the church, to the Karis Bible College, for having an in-person church service. Well, joining me now to talk more about this, to explain the fact that Karis Bible College is not just sitting down, but they are standing up, is the senior litigation attorney with Liberty Counsel, Richard Mast. Richard, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Tony, thanks for having me.
All right. Just give our listeners the details of this case as it is unfolding.
Well, we received a call Thursday night from the ministry, and they had received a cease and desist letter from the Attorney General's office telling them that they were in violation of the various orders and that they had to cease and desist immediately or they would seek injunctive relief. And this was kind of surprising in light of the vocal support and the mass protests and riots that have taken place, and to my knowledge, have not received any cease and desist letters.
Yeah, and it was just 30 minutes from Karis Bible College in Aurora, where I believe some of these major events took place. And you're right. To my knowledge, I did not hear anything about a crackdown on public protest, even those that were lawless in nature. But yet, they had time to focus on a church that was it's a ministry exercising their First Amendment freedom.
Well, that's right. And the double standard here is shocking. You know, if the left didn't have double standards, they would have no standards at all. And what we've seen from Governor Polis is of saying to the folks protesting, if it's not possible to stay home, then it is not possible to stay silent. And anybody who is demonstrating should do their best to keep their distance between themselves and others and wear a face covering. And this just goes to show the disdain which the hard left has for Christianity and for ministries and for the people of faith. And they pick and choose between First Amendment rights of speech or religious free exercise, and the Constitution doesn't allow that. There's no pause button during a pandemic for First Amendment rights.
Well, and having been there, I saw the measures that Kara's Bible College was taking. All of the staff, they were wearing masks, hand sanitizer at all the doors. The facility, I think, seats somewhere roughly about 3,200, and there was less than a third in there for that reason of, you know, making sure there's plenty of space. The issue, or the, I think what got the attention, my view, it was being broadcast, webcast, and there was several thousand, tens of thousands watching online and on TV. And I think that, I do think, Richard, I do think, as I'm now watching how this is playing out, that it is now somewhat selective, and it's being used by some, not all, but some, as a way to minimize the political influence and engagement of Christians and conservatives.
Yeah, I agree with that 100%. And what we've seen here, this is a ministry that has bent over backwards to fulfill every reasonable request under these orders in terms of social distancing, in terms of all of these other measures that they have asked them to take. And really, there is this this dichotomy of 50% capacity or 175 people, and whichever is less. And, you know, that's just that's an undue burden. And when they have taken all of these other steps at sanitization and social distancing and everything else, and they're actually doing it better than these crowds could possibly do, to threaten a lawsuit against them is just outrageous.
So next steps, Richard?
Well, we're preparing to take legal action on that, and you'll be the first to know. I expect that to come shortly.
All right. I think we lost you, Richard. I'll be the first to know. There you are.
I'm still there. Can you hear me okay?
I can hear you now.
You
so I do want I want you back on as soon as there are actions taken, because I think, you know, this is one where I was there personally. I saw what unfolded. And as you said, they're doing everything they can to comply. And I think this is, quite frankly, I think it's selective. I think it's outrageous.
I do, too. Hey, thanks for being there, and thanks for supporting free speech. This is something that all Americans should be concerned about. And it's not, you know, the First Amendment must be defended. It's not going to defend itself.
You're absolutely right. Richard Mast, we look forward to having you back on as this case unfolds. Thanks so much for joining us today. And if you think it's limited to Colorado, well, think again. The governor in California, Governor Newsom, banning singing in churches. Obviously, he doesn't know the scripture. I don't know. Is he wanting the rocks to cry out? Is it time for the rocks to cry out? Or is it time for churches, for pastors, for Christians to stand up? Joining now to talk more about this is Travis Weber, Vice President of Policy and Government Affairs here at the Family Research Council. Travis, welcome back.
Thank you, Tony.
Okay, tell our listeners what just took place at the end of last week in California.
Yeah, so it looks like the state of California has issued guidance for places of worship and religious services. The guidance that I'm looking at here is dated July 6th, and kind of goes through a number of steps that the state of California thinks churches should take or must take, depending upon the provision of the guidance we're looking at. I think what's most problematic here is that the guidance says that chanting and singing in churches, because that can spread the virus, it's required to be halted. That there can't be any chanting or singing in churches yet. when considering the matter of protests, the state of California just says that people should wear face coverings to deal with the risk of spreading the virus by chanting and singing. So definitely a serious issue here when it comes to the difference in treatment that religious services and protests seem to be getting. There's obviously the distinction between the outdoor and indoor services, but Tony, as you've pointed out, I think we can conclude now that based on the government reactions to these the protests, when contrasted with the government reactions to religious services and other gatherings in coronavirus, in the coronavirus clampdown, there's definitely a difference in reaction by many government officials.
Well, let me just say that those engaged in some of the protests, especially the illegal protests, will gladly wear face coverings and masks so that they cannot be seen. The double standard is troubling. Now, I want to go back, you know, a couple of months, 3 months ago, you know, when this first broke, you know, we were for, you know, until they could get a handle on this thing, that, you know, churches comply with the request not to meet. But when a double standard began to emerge, that's a whole different story. In fact, folks, we got a few minutes left. I got about 8 minutes left. I've got a poll question for you today that pertains to this. Here's the question. Do you think churches should comply with coronavirus restrictions on meeting, singing, etc., when those restrictions are not being applied to other gatherings such as public protest? Text the word radio to 53445. Again, text the word radio to 53445. You'll be sent a link to take the poll question. Do you think churches should comply with coronavirus restrictions on meeting, singing, etc., when those restrictions are not being applied to other gatherings such as public protest? And Travis, that's the real issue, is that there is a double standard that's being applied here. And I'm now beginning to see and grow. My concern is growing that this will be used, especially during this election year, to limit the activity, engagement, communication, in-person communication of religious groups, conservative religious groups, that could have an impact on the election. I think there's some motivation on the part of some. I'm not going to say all, but on the part of some, this could be used to limit the influence of conservative Christians in the country.
Yeah, Tony, I think people are very right to be concerned about this when we look at the situation in total. You know, so we have guidance like that, which California issued here, but then you have government officials addressing various matters such as church services and indicating that they don't want them being conducted normally, you know, with singing, et cetera, but failing to address the widespread protests that have popped up nationally, or at least, you know, many places around the country, failing to address those protests with the same level of scrutiny or the same approach with regard to supposed concerns about the coronavirus spreading. So people are certainly right, you know, to be concerned when we look at the overall difference in treatment that the same government officials will apply to protest and to church services. I don't think, you know, anyone can look at the situation overall and not be concerned. And frankly, it's unconstitutional if, under the First Amendment, the government is singling out religious activity for specially worse treatment than right. other secular activity. So, you know, whenever there's a difference in treatment here and it's clear and government policy, there is a First Amendment violation. And frankly, these could be occurring in many places around the country.
You know, my sense is that some of these leaders, governor of Colorado, governor of Kansas, of California, they know that the Christian community, by and large, is compliant and will abide by the law. They're law-abiding citizens, whereas the mobs in the street, not the peaceful protests, but the mobs that are tearing down statues, looting, burning, they don't have control over that. And so what they do is they turn their attention to the law-abiding citizens, and they come up with what ends up as a double standard. But we have to go back to the Constitution. We are a country ruled by law, not by individuals, not by a king, not by governors. We're ruled by law. And the Constitution, we've been discussing this over the last couple of months, is very clear, as you just pointed out. If there is an inequitable treatment, the benefit should always accrue to constitutionally protected activity, which would be religious freedom. That's certainly unlawful behavior. Lawlessness is not protected under the Constitution, but it's kind of like we've turned this thing on its head where some of these government officials are protecting the lawless behavior, but not the constitutionally protected behavior.
I do think the driving force oftentimes seems to be what is politically palatable for how certain government officials will address these things. That's not a government official's proper motivation. They should be being motivated by the First Amendment, by other constitutional rights, and say, how do we protect these constitutional rights with these various situations that are developing? Yet you often – I mean, I think there's even been indications where officials have explicitly said or certainly some public health officials I saw explicitly saying that they think it's perfectly fine for protesters to be out because of the cause they're engaged in without masks. Yes. Or – because people are protesting based on a view, a different matter, or want to engage in religious services, they're not protected.
I actually think that was Mayor de Blasio in New York that made that statement.
Tony, this is, not only is this unconstitutional, it shows a troubling departure from the principles of governance that should animate and motivate all public servants in the United States, those with a public trust. Should be always saying, how do we protect constitutional rights here, first among them freedom of religion, free exercise under the First Amendment? So not only are there legal problems with many of these situations, and people are right to take notice of them, raise concerns, and bring legal challenges, but there's also a question of motivation here for what government officials are even doing when they're approaching this in such a lopsided manner.
This is one of those cases where I do not believe the church should be like sheep and led to the slaughter. I think that we need to be rise up as bold as a lion and say, no, we have the foundation of a constitution that protects this freedom, and we need to exercise this freedom lest we lose this freedom and our children and grandchildren as well. Travis Weber, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
And folks, I want to thank you for joining us. Here's the results in from our poll question. I didn't have a whole lot of time, but overwhelmingly, 97% said churches should not comply. 1% said they should. 1% not sure. Folks, I think this is a serious moment. I'm going to talk more about this tomorrow, so I hope you'll join us here on Washington Watch. Until then, I leave you with the encouraging words of the Apostle Paul, found in Ephesians 6, where he says, when you've done everything that you can do, when you've prayed, when you've prepared, and when you've taken your stand, by all means, keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is brought to you by Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. Portions of the show discussing candidates are brought to you by Family Research Council Action. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.